understood it all now. Gobblers tore apart the Sky Tower's structure at the geostationary level. That's why the lower half of the tower collapsed, while the upper half went spinning off into deep space. And the evidence was at the bottom of the Atlantic's mid-ocean ridge, being melted away by the hot magma boiling into the ocean water.
I made gobblers for them, Toshikazu admitted, his eyes still closed.
You made the gobblers for the Flower Dragon people? Bracknell asked. Or for the New Morality? With a weary shake of his head, Toshikazu replied,
Neither. They were merely the agents for...
For who?
Yamagata.
Bracknell gaped at the dying man. Yamagata Corporation. Of course. It would take a powerful interplanetary corporation to plan and execute the destruction of the Sky Tower.
Yamagata, Toshikazu repeated. I was the last one to know.
Addy looked up at Bracknell.
Now we know. No, said Toshikazu. I've told you nothing. Nothing. I died without telling you anything. If they thought you knew...
His eyes closed. His head slumped to one side. And Bracknell said, Yamagata. Crime and Punishment. Bracknell was still in the infirmary with Addy and the unconscious Toshikazu when the rescue team from Hiryu came in, led by Captain Farad. The elderly Japanese man was accompanied by two young muscular types, also Asian, who gently lifted Toshikazu onto a stretcher and carried him away. The old man stayed and asked Addy for Toshikazu's medical file. She popped the chip from the computer storage and handed it to him. With a sibilant hiss of thanks, the old man pushed his long hair back from his face and asked her, Does this chip include audio data, perhaps?
Audio data?
Asked Addy.
You must have spoken to him extensively while he was under your care, said the old man. Are your conversations included in this chip?
She glanced at Bracknell, who said, He was unconscious most of the time. When he did talk, it was mostly rambling. Incomprehensible.
I see.
The old man looked from Bracknell's face to Addy's and then back again.
I see,
he repeated. Captain Farad, impatient as usual, asked, Is there anything else you need? The old man stroked his chin for a moment as though thinking it over.
No, he said at last. I believe I have everything I need.
He left with the captain. Addy broke into a pleased smile.
I think we saved his life, Mance.
Maybe, Bracknell said, still gazing at the open hatch where the captain and the Japanese elder had left.
There's nothing more to do here, said Addy. I'm going to my quarters and take a good long shower.
Bracknell nodded.
Will you walk me home? She asked, smiling up at him.
Her quarters were down the passageway, his own a dozen meters farther. When they got to her door, Addy clutched at his arm and tugged him into her compartment. He began to protest.
Your father is busy seeing off the rescue team, Addy interrupted, and there are no cameras in my quarters. I've made certain of that. But I shouldn't be in here alone with you. Are you afraid?
She grinned impishly.
Damn right.
The compartment was much like his own quarters. A bunk, a built-in desk and dresser, accordion pleat doors for the closet and lavatory. Addy touched the control panel on the wall and the overhead lights turned off, leaving only the lamp on the bedside table.
Addy, this is wrong.
But he heard the blood pulsing through his body, felt his heart pounding. She stood before him, smiling knowingly.
Don't you like me, Mance? Not even a little.
It's not that...
Today is my 17th birthday, Mance. I am legally an adult now, and rather wealthy, you know. I can control my own dowry now. I can make my own decisions.
She reached up to the tab at the throat of her coveralls and slid the zipper all the way down to her crotch. She wasn't wearing a bra, he saw. Her body was young and full and beckoning. "I love you, Mance," Addie murmured, stepping up to him and sliding her arms around his neck. He clutched her and pulled her close and kissed her upturned face, and heard the door behind him burst open with a furious roar from Captain Farad. Before Bracknell could turn to face her father, he felt the searing pain of a stun wand at full charge and blacked out as he slumped to the floor. Aboard Hiryu, the elderly Japanese assassin composed a final message to Nobuhiko Yamagata. He encrypted the video himself, a task which took no little time, even with the aid of the ship's computer.
"Most illustrious master, the last individual is now in our care. He will be treated as required. Unfortunately, he has probably contaminated the vessel in which we found him. Therefore, that vessel will be dealt with. This will be my last transmission to you, or anyone in this life. Sayonara."
When Bracknell came back to consciousness, he was already in a hard shell suit, its helmet sealed to the neck ring. The captain was glaring at him, his eyes raging with fury.
"I told you to keep away from her," he screamed at Bracknell, loud enough to penetrate the helmet's thick insulation. "I warned you! Where is she? What have you done? She's in her quarters crying. She'll get over it. I'll have to marry her off sooner than I planned, but it'll be better than having her throw herself at scum like you."
Bracknell felt himself being hauled to his feet and realized there were at least two other crewmen behind him. His legs wouldn't function properly. The stun wand's charge was still scrambling his nervous system. "Drag him down to the auxiliary airlock," the captain snarled. "That goddamn Hiryu is still connected to the main lock."
"But I didn't do anything," Bracknell protested.
"The hell you didn't." Like a sack of limp laundry, Bracknell was hauled along the passageway and into the airlock. The captain clipped a tether to the waist of his spacesuit and handed him the loose end.
"You can find a cleat for yourself and clip onto it. Otherwise you can float out to infinity for all I care."
Bracknell tottered uncertainly in the hard shell suit. His legs tingled as if they'd been asleep. "He's going to kill me," he thought. "I'm going to die out there. There's no way I can survive in a suit all the way out to the belt. Even if he sends out more air and food, how can I..." The inner airlock hatch slammed shut, and Bracknell felt through the thick soles of his boots the pump starting to chuck the air out of the darkened metal chamber. In less than a minute, the pump stopped, and the outer hatch swung open silently. Bracknell saw the cold, distant stars staring at him. On unsteady legs, still twitching from the stun charge, he clumped to the lip of the hatch. Peering out along the ship's skin, he saw a set of cleats within arm's reach. For a moment, he thought of refusing to go outside. "I'll just stay here in the airlock," he told himself. Then he realized that the captain would simply have a few men suit up and throw him out, maybe without even the tether. So, like a man going through the motions of a nightmare, he attached the end of his tether to the nearest cleat and then stepped out into nothingness. The airlock hatch slid shut behind him. He glided silently as the tether unreeled, then was pulled up short. A sardonic voice in his head mocked, "You're at the end of your tether. A hell of a way to die." He realized that despite his contemplation of suicide, despite Addie's tutoring him in the desirelessness of the Buddhist path, he very much wanted to live. Why? Why not just open the seal of this helmet and end it all here and now? The answer rose in his mind like the fireball of a nuclear explosion. Vengeance. Victor and Danvers had betrayed him, and Yamagata was the biggest bastard of them all. Yamagata had brought down the Sky Tower, and that had given Victor the opportunity to steal Lara from him. Molina, Danvers, Yamagata. He would live to work his vengeance on them. "But you won't live long enough to succeed," that mocking inner voice told him. Looking around as he floated in the emptiness, he saw on the far side of Alhambra's curving hull that the other ship was still linked. What was its name?